Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Horsemanship Journey Podcast. My name is Shane Jacob, your host, and I appreciate you taking your time to join us today. Don't forget to check out Stable Living at thehorsemanshipjourney.com. Stable Living is our online coaching program that uses principles that we see in horses to help teens and their parents thrive through the transition to adulthood and teens to continue to thrive as adults. Today, we're excited to have our special guest for today is David Osk. Did I say that right, David?
You did.
All right. Good deal. I'm glad to hear it. David is an entrepreneur, an inventor, and a coach. And in his spare time, he sings on stages all across the country. David, you've done so many things. I thought it'd be best if I left you to most of the introduction. So appreciate you taking your time to be with us today. Tell us a little bit more about yourself, your story, where it started, and how you got to be where you are.
Yeah. Well, first of all, thanks for having me on. I did some research, not only on your podcast, but on your website. And you and I have got similar hearts in caring for families and in various ways. So I'm really thrilled to be here with you and honored to be here. It looks like you're doing really, really important work. I grew up in a little town in Minnesota, actually. And I moved to Nashville when I was, right after high school, really. So been here for quite a few years. And it's been a great place to raise a family. Lisa and I have been married for 25 years now. And I've got a 19-year-old son who's in college, just entering his second year in college. And my daughter is actually starting her senior year. So that's kind of my family profile there. But I do a lot of different things. That's kind of my personality. I kind of fit that, the definition of an entrepreneur, kind of multiple irons in the fire. And, by the way, I used to think that I just had kind of a short attention span and couldn't, stick to anything. And what I realized is, nope, that's actually my personality. And I have kind of a wide desires and a wide skill set. So I have, I've invented a product about 10 years ago with my brother-in-law called the StatGuard Plus, and it's a thermostat guard with a combination lock, so you don't have to worry about losing that little key. And we sell in about 3,700 retail stores. I facilitate a mastermind group within the Iron Sharpens Iron Mastermind. I do some life coaching, and like you said, I do some music. So I moved to Nashville, millions of people, right, to be a vocalist, and I was a vocal major at Belmont. And I still do quite a bit. So it's fun to kind of have a side hustle, as it were, that is not only life-giving, but, can be kind of lucrative as well. So, yeah.
Right on. Well, tell us, you're in these masterminds and you're out there and you're coaching. And what do you see when you look into the world? What do you see the obstacles to success? What do you see people stumble? What's the big holdups?
Man, that's a great question. I think the first thing would probably be this idea of self-awareness, and that I think a lot of that kind of gets misunderstood. And I like to kind of pop a few bubbles, with regards to words like authenticity and identity and things like that. I'm one, and I think you're tracking with me here. I ask people quite often, where do we even get the word authenticity, right? When we're talking about self-awareness, we get the word authenticity from the word author, right? We didn't make us. I didn't make me. In fact, I didn't choose my eye color, my taste buds, and even in the land of the free and the home of the brave, I didn't choose my own personality. We don't choose anything. We get to choose what we do with it. But how do we know that that's true, like gravity? Well, those of us who have kids, Parker and Kate, right? Parker, when he came out of the gate, he was so him, right? He's just wild. And I mean, he had all of these likes and dislikes and fears and just everything from the way he would kind of growl when he played when he was, 2 and 3 years old to the things that made him laugh. And guess what? My daughter, very different, right? Me and my siblings, right? We're vastly different. And children, you know, when they, when they're in, you know, those early years, right, 0 to 5 or 6 years old, they're not thinking about being authentic, right? They're like we are, until life kind of punches them in the face a little bit. But, you know, every little spirit is so different. So what I think is fascinating is when we as adults can kind of get over our own egos a little bit and start answering some really, really important questions about, you know, for instance, core values, right? That term gets thrown around quite a bit too, but I like to say, what does your core happen to value more than anything in the entire world? Well, we're limited to the English language, or I am anyway. And in our, you know, our culture, there's, you know, I don't know, 80 or 100 possible core values with some overlap, of course. But here's what's interesting. So Shane, if you and I were to do a core values assessment right now, and you were to, you know, put a check mark next to the ones that you resonate with, and then narrow that down to 20, and then narrow that down to 10, and narrow that down to 5, and put those things in a priority, right, a hierarchy, it would be different than mine. And if you couple that, so this idea of authenticity, right, what makes up a person? We can say mind, body, and spirit, but you have values, but you also have convictions. Well, that's not a value. A conviction is what do you believe is right and wrong? A virtue is something else. A virtue is this idea of an outward focus. What type of an impact do I want to have on those around me? And I mean, of course, then you look at strengths and how do I want to apply those strengths? And I like to say, you know, like what gives you goosebumps, right? What is it that puts that lump in your throat in a really good way? And that's different for everybody. And you put all of that stuff together and we are so vastly different. But again, what are we really doing? We're identifying, right? Identity, all of those things. And it's kind of simple and kind of complex at the same time. And I think that, so to answer your question in a pretty long form here, is that self-awareness piece is vital. And I think that's where most people, you know, shoot out of the gate and they're trying to please their dad, they're trying to please their uncle, please their teacher, please some talking head on TV, or not look like an idiot. You know, they don't even know who they are, let alone why they're doing anything. So I think that self-awareness piece is absolutely front and center. And if you don't get that right, you're going to spend years, decades, maybe your entire life completely exhausted living someone else's definition of success.
So true. So true. That's a great point. Just to be aware of, take the time to know who we are, know what we want, know what our values are, and so on and so forth. That this word authenticity is, it's an interesting word to me. When I hear people use it, sometimes I really wonder what they mean. Do they mean that they want to be their natural self? Do they mean that they want to be true to themselves? Do they mean that they want to be, you know, act on their feelings? Is that being authentic? Is it just kind of whatever you feel in the moment? I mean, like, yeah. I don't know what people mean by that. I think that maybe they're just not aware.
Well, and that's it, right? Nobody really talks about this stuff because, you know, most parents, I mean, your parents, they probably didn't talk about it. Mine kind of did, you know, but I think our generation, you know, albeit we've got a bit more time on our hands because we live in a world that's, you know, rather easy in many aspects, we've got some more time to even contemplate some of this stuff. But I think it's really important to understand, you know, that we don't make, you know, good things ultimate things. There is a progression to understanding, you know, I'll say whose we are and who we are and how all of that plays out naturally. But if we get that, you know, those things out of order, guess what? We don't feel natural. We start to feel anxious, you know, imposter syndrome and depression and all that kind of stuff. But when we get the right order, you know, by the way, that I work real closely with a guy named Dr. Andy Garrett, who's a psychologist. And he told me one time, he said, do you know where we get the term disorder? You know, like mental disorder, eating disorder, whatever it is. There's something out of order. It's disordered. And so when we understand, you know, that God made everything with a purpose and a progression to understand it and use it, and we get those things in order, well, guess what? You know, follow the clues, right? We start to feel genuine. We start to feel, you know, resilient and courageous and free, and we have clarity of purpose. But if you don't understand those things, right, you're going to suffer. it's going to be imposter syndrome and depression. You're going to probably start avoiding certain people and places or homework even. Or, I mean, you talk, you know, of course, your mission is to help parents and teens. And I do a lot of that as well. But think about young people, right? They're sitting most likely in a classroom where they're constantly comparing themselves to someone else with no rudder. They're extrinsically motivated, as opposed to, hey, guess what, guys? This is who I am. This is who I value. This is why I get up in the morning. This is the dent in the universe that I want to have. These are the tools that are in my belt, you know. And when they don't have that, they're going to start avoiding, I mean, everything from good conflict to bad conflict, you know, to conversations that they should have. They're going to be, you know, suffer fatigue and isolation. And I mean, you name it, it just, the list goes on and on. But again, when we start identifying those things and get them in the right order, well, guess what? We start to feel rather natural and free and courageous and resilient.
Right on. So we hear, you know, as we go on, if we have something that we want to change, if we're seeking change, if we want to develop ourselves, one of the things that we hear a lot in the world is that we hear to focus on the why. We hear a lot about the why,
yep,
which I believe is important. You have a different perspective on that, or a unique perspective, I'll say, because I've heard you say that to never start with why.
Yeah. So, and I, you know, there's a book out there, Simon Sinek, who wrote the book Start With Why. And of course, there's so many great things in there. He's probably a much more intelligent person than I am. But I think that what's fascinating is if you don't start with who first, right? Back to that self-awareness piece. Your why might be somebody else's. Your why might be the cool person next to you. You know, if you're in high school, your why might be your dad's. I mean, not that he has a bad why, but it's just not yours. You're not the same person. Your why might be Joe Rogan's, or heck, it might be Shane Jacobs, right? It might be somebody that you just really admire, but since you lack that inner constitution and I like the word constitution, honestly, like it's written down. It's almost like when you think about your inner constitution, like the stone tablet, this is me. If you have not identified, right, if you don't have an identity, your why, again, it might not be, but most likely it's going to be a definition of someone else's success.
When you talk about the who, like you've talked a little bit about this, but I mean, really, what's the steps? What are you suggesting when we define who we are? And if we don't, you know, we can't have the awareness, and we can get stuck, and we can't make progress if we don't have this awareness. But so how do we go about establishing the who?
The who, yeah. So of course, in an ideal situation, right? Everybody. So let me paint the picture this way. My favorite quote really in the last couple of years has been by Benjamin Disraeli, former PM of England back in the 1800s. And he said, the greatest good you can do for another is not to share with him your riches, but to reveal to him his own. Well, think about, what does that look like, you know, in the case of being a dad? Right? Wouldn't it be just the greatest thing if every father knew who he was, right? There wasn't this big question mark. And then when he was raising his, we'll just say, since we're talking about sons here, raising his son, you know, and be able to look at his son from an early age, right? I'm talking 3 and 4, you know, hey buddy, I saw yesterday when you did this, you know, when you, you know, and heck, I'll paint a picture using your kind of your life there with, you know, horses and everything else, right? You know, hey buddy, when I saw you, when you roped that calf the other day, or when you, you know, wrestled that sheep to the ground, or whatever it was, right? You helped us, you know, complete whatever task on the farm. I could tell that it was kind of scary for you, but I love your courage there. I love that you stepped out and you did it anyway, and you trusted me because I was standing there with you. Or maybe they get a little bit older, and there's, you know, their son is sitting on the front steps with a buddy, and he's asking his friend great questions like, man, how are you? You've seemed like you're a little bit down lately. And the dad comes in later and says, hey, I was actually sitting around the corner listening to your conversation with your friend, and I love how you cared for them. I love how you ask questions. It's obviously important to you. You know, those types of things are important to you, aren't they? right? So you're seeing something in a younger person. And this could be, it should be fathering first and foremost, but then of course a mentor, you know, coach, whatever it is. You're seeing something in a younger person and you're saying something, you're validating the riches, the identity, those clues, right, that are starting to rise to the top as they, another clinical term, as they self-actualize, right? Those teen years and early 20s, when they kind of draw a line in the sand, or they should anyway, this is who I am. And, you know, here's the boundaries around me. And, but so what if you didn't get that? Right. And this is something that you and I see, right? Because we're coaching a lot of people, families, fathers and mothers and so on, that this is an absolutely foreign concept to them. So what I think is fantastic is it really starts with just asking great questions in a really safe place, right? If someone asks you the right questions in the right format and the right progression, oh my gosh, you can start identifying that stuff rather quickly. And what I think is neat too is, you know, we're made, you know, to be in community with one another. It's the entire point of life. There is no other point to life. It's all about relationships. The rest is a context. What does that really mean then? It means that when we're standing next to the people that, you know, we're doing life with, you know, it's if I see something in my friend Al, right? And I'm 50. He'll be 50 in the next week. But I still, to this day, he and I have spent almost every day together since we were 4 years old, and we still affirm and validate one another because we need it, right? If I sleep, I forget. So we were made to give, to love, to pour into, to lift up, to shine a spotlight on. It doesn't matter if it's a teenager or a young person. We all need that. And that's what love looks like, right? It's not just, hey, I love you, you know? I mean, it's okay, great. But boy, you start validating someone's character and action, that changes their life.
Yeah. That is such a interesting response you had to that question. And I love the quote. I'm gonna remember that about not sharing our riches, but helping people see their own. That's awesome.
Oh man, it's so good.
Wondering, David, if you could talk a little bit about resiliency and grit, the difference, just talk about that.
Yeah. You know, so this is something that, so Dr. Andy and I, we walk, you know, not only cohorts and things like that through this, what he calls his True North resilience, you know, program, but we do corporations even. So 2 weeks ago, I was in Oregon walking a restaurant chain, you know, director level and up, their whole staff through this resiliency program. So I'll paint the picture really quickly. Resiliency is just simply getting up faster, right? If we had to break it down into something, you know, this idea of I got knocked down, I'm getting up quick. If you're resilient, you know, you're not laying on the ground for 3 days, right? You get knocked down, you stand up. But here's what's fascinating is it's, if you have self-awareness, resiliency isn't just standing up for extrinsic motivation, right? I'm embarrassed. I'm in the mud. I'm going to get up just because I'm embarrassed. No. So Dr. Andy has this analogy where he says true resiliency is like a basketball, right? You bounce it hard on the court and for a split second, it loses its shape. But then what? Right back to a predetermined, measurable, definable space. So when you have that self-awareness piece, right, it's like, boom, I'm back. And grit, I think it's, you know, I'm writing a book called The Guardians of Grit, and it's for, you know, dads who want to raise uncrushable young, you know, young people. And so grit to me is exciting. It's this idea of traction, you know, kind of this fortitude piece where I'm going to do something difficult over a long period of time because what's on the other side of that hill, as it were, is worth fighting for. And, but again, we can be kind of gritty for the wrong reasons, right? I spent many, many years wanting to accomplish things and being kind of gritty, like staying with stuff, but it was exhausting because I was extrinsically motivated. I was doing it for the applause of everybody around me. I wanted to, quote unquote, be somebody, you know, that the world thought was valuable, or at least not be a nobody. And there's a big difference. When you understand who you are, resilience and grit are a predetermined definable place inside of you. You're driven intrinsically as opposed to fear and shame.
Awesome. Looking forward to your book about boys and man being grit. I think that, there's ideas and that we've had in the world, maybe they're changing of how, how we perceive weakness and what grit is and really what toughness is, and really what courage is.
Yeah.
And, it used to be that some things that were and still are perceived as weaknesses is something that's really, I think, hurt manhood and boyhood. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think I grew up largely in a kind of an older school society where, if on a basic level, and we've heard this before, but right, if you cut your hand or whatever, you better wrap duct tape on it and keep on going. Well, sometimes that's actually quite appropriate. Don't be a sissy. Like, at the same time, I grew up in a family where if you needed 5 or 6 stitches, you still wrapped duct tape on it and walked it off. Where, okay, come on, you're human. Be self-aware enough to care for yourself and love yourself enough so that you don't have to have some, deformed finger or stupid surgery later. And so I think there's that balance between, just understanding, is the task at hand worth pushing through right now? Or, self-care is a bit more important. And then, of course, just this idea of, emotions and so on. Sometimes, there's a popular sentiment out there that we cannot trust our emotions. Well, I think there's some validity in that. At the same time, I like this idea of following the clues. Right? When you start kind of acting in alignment with the person that God created you to be, this idea that why am I different from, my brother or my sister for that matter? And why am I different from you? And I start dialing in those things. Man, my emotions are really important because they give me clues as to, am I headed in the right direction? And again, that's not necessarily that the clue might be something as easy and even makes me happy. It might be that I've actually driven a stake in the ground and I'm willing now to do hard things and experience severe opposition because what I'm doing is I believe in it and I'm not looking for happiness. I'm looking for fulfillment. And there's a huge difference there. So I don't know. Does that answer your question?
It does. I just wanted to come back, and I guess, and just ask you, listening to you today and your experience and your own life and in helping others, any thoughts on like what can listeners do to like move the needle in their own lives?
Oh man, yeah. So I think again, kind of these pillars. It's self-awareness, but to me that includes your faith, right? Your mind, body, and spirit. You really need to decide what you believe about who created you, right? It's a big deal. So I'm not gonna go too far there. But that idea of self-awareness, also a support system, your inner circle, right? If you think about the Knights at the Round Table, and I sent a picture of the Knights at the Round Table I created with ChatGPT the other day. Sent that to a buddy of mine, and I said, I'm glad to be sitting at this table with you, and your support system, that inner circle is just absolutely important. And so pick those people, right? And when I heard somebody say the other day, by the way, everybody is a counselor. Meaning if you open your mouth, you're giving counsel. So make sure that, you listen to people who are wise, people who've, fallen down a bunch and gotten up. And who are, who do justly and love mercy and walk humbly. Because quite often you're going to listen to somebody who actually is just very compelling. But what they have to say is absolute horse hockey. So you got to be careful with that. And then I think, lately, I'll be honest, if I'm going to just maybe spitballing here, I think this idea of self-care is just really important. That's something that I didn't learn very well. And so I think to love your neighbor as you love yourself, I think most of us need to spend a bit more time on that, whether that's just some mental space, right? Just block out the noise. Be willing to think your own thoughts and trust your own thoughts. You know, care for your body, care for your spirit. Surround yourself with great people. Make sure that you're being filled, and you know, make that a priority. Otherwise, you know, you're going to suffer, and everybody else around you is as well.
Right on. Yep, I'm with you. Stay away from the horse hockey.
That's right. I got that from that old movie MASH.
Yep. David, tell us about the music you're making and some of the cool things you've done. And what's that about? What exactly do you do? Man. Tell us all about it.
So, you know, it's funny. I moved to Nashville and a few years later recorded a record with my sister that's like a contemporary Christian record. And then my mom was a music teacher. So we grew up listening to, you know, every kind of show tune, classical, you name it. So largely, my music can be defined as kind of popra, you know. So if you go search David Ask, David A-S-K, it's on Spotify and iTunes and so on. I've got a few things on YouTube. And, but I, you know, I've been able to sing for, you know, the governor here and at the Symphony Center. And I mean, sing back up and share the stage with a lot of famous people. It's been really, you know, really exciting. And many, I've had some really, really neat moments. In fact, I'm looking at a non-disclosure agreement on my wall that, so I got to sing at I'll say it this way. I got to sing at what probably is the most famous golf course in the country and four times, but they said I can't talk about it, you know, and use their name. But so as a golfer and a vocalist, to be able to do stuff like that is really incredible. And yeah, I'm actually getting ready here to record some new music this fall and was actually asked to sing backup for Andrea Bocelli when he was here just a few months ago. And I wasn't able to do it. I had a conflict that night, but you know, I'm grateful. It's one of those things that's kind of a quote unquote side hustle, but man, it's a fun one.
Part of who you are. Appreciate that. Interesting. Yeah. David, what would you like to leave us with today? Last thoughts for the horsemanship journey.
You know what? I would say a challenge, you know, to the parents out there, back to that quote, you know, the greatest good is that you can do for another is not to share with him your riches, but to reveal to him his own. So do yourself a favor and just start asking really great questions about your kids, about what they value. And when you see them doing something that's good and right and pure and noble and lovely, shine a spotlight on it and say something. Look them in the eye, pat them on the back, give them a hug and validate that stuff. That's when they're going to start, you know, having a real sense of ownership of who they are and self-trust and self-esteem and all that kind of thing. It's really, really important.
Well, I appreciate that. Super solid advice. Thank you so much. David, where can people find out about, what's the best way to reach you, find out what you got going on and all the different things you got?
Yeah, well, thanks. So my website is davidosk.com. If you want to check out my thermostat guard line, you know, if you run a business and want to, or heck, for your home for that matter, and want people to stop touching your thermostat, you can go to statguardplus.com. And let's see, my email address is hello@davidosk.com. So I'm on all the socials and things like that, but I'd love to connect. And if there's something I can do for you, you know, your audience, whatever, no strings attached, I'll do my best.
Awesome. David, thank you so much for joining us today on the Horsemanship Journey podcast. We wish you continued success. Ladies and gentlemen, David Ask.
Thank you. Thank you.